This is a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network. Welcome to the Vintage Homeschool Mom Show. Your host, Felice Gerwitz, is an author, a publisher, and your radio show host. She will encourage, educate, and inspire you with answers to your most pressing questions, from homeschool, marriage, parenting, and much more. Felice loves to equip moms to live a Christian life because every moment counts. Be sure to visit her website at mediaangels.com. And here's your host, Felice Gerwitz.
Welcome to all of you who are joining me today. And this is the first Monday of the month. And every first Monday of the month, you are going to enjoy lunch with Meredith and Felice. And today with me on the line is my co-host for this session, and that is Meredith Curtis. Welcome, Meredith.
Thank you, Felice, so much for having me here. I'm really excited about the show and about today, and so thank you.
Yeah, well, Meredith, we talked about this a long time ago, about having a podcast where you and I would do a monthly session, and I think I was the one saying, no, I don't think I want to do that, and here we are doing it. And so, you know, thank you for planting that seed, you know, some time ago, and, you know, I'm looking forward to this too. So you have a show on the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network that is the Finish Well Radio Show, with members of, you know, your church and teen group, as well as some young adults. And that is twice a month on Monday, so you guys will want to check out that show. And Meredith is also a busy homeschool mom with high schoolers now, right?
Yes.
And also a pastor's wife, and you lead worship for your church. So not too much of a downtime for you, and I know you've got a lot of other things that I didn't even touch on. But what we are going to talk about today, Meredith, actually is the subject of a book you wrote on homeschooling, but not only that, homeschooling joyfully. So let's just start out with, you know, being real and the fact that we are not always joyful. And so let's just start there.
Well, I think homeschooling moms do struggle a lot with finding joy in homeschooling, because the truth is that life is full of ups and downs and bumps, and you can make the perfect schedule, but the baby and the toddler, or even the husband, or even sometimes the emotional ups and downs of your children are not going to allow that schedule to work perfectly. So there is always something to make us say, oh my goodness, this is not going the way I thought it would. In addition to that, I think homeschooling moms put a lot of expectations on themselves, and a lot of times they feel like they don't measure up. And so you have that sense of discouragement. You know, I wish I was a better mom. I wish I was a better teacher. And so I think that struggling with joy is an issue in among homeschooling families.
Mm-hmm. No, I do, and I think, you know, the enemy uses that. You know, my children and I were talking about different things, and, you know, we all have our weaknesses and areas that we struggle with, and whatever that one area is, I just think it gets magnified with putting it into the homeschool mix. You know, there are a lot of people that come into homeschooling, like you said, with all of these expectations, but also maybe taking their eyes off of where the Lord's leading them and looking at others. And I know for me, that has been the one thing that I've really had to overcome, that I can't look right or left. I just have to look straight and continue onward, because I know that if I'd given myself options, especially when I started homeschooling, I don't think I would have lasted. You know, I feel like one of the important things, and that's one of the things we're going to do at the end of the show, is we're going to do a recap and leave you with some things. But one of the things that I really want to talk about is your commitment to homeschooling, because I know For me, there was no other choice. This is what I was going to do. And because I had made this firm commitment to homeschooling, I knew that if certain things didn't work, that I would look for alternatives and I wasn't just going to give up. So let's talk about that, Meredith. Do you think that that's an important facet?
I really do, Felice. And, you know, in the beginning when I started homeschooling, and this goes takes us way back into the early 90s. I started in 1991, but I was researching it in the late 80s, and there weren't a lot of homeschool moms. And,
right.
And you know, it really, over and over, as I picked up the Teaching Home magazine and as I, you know, read things by Mary Pride and Greg Harris and others, I just remember over and over hearing, if the Lord has called you to this, and things about it being, you know, a calling, a ministry. And so that is really, I had felt like the Lord had called us. And, you know, my husband was kind of thinking, this is weird. I've never heard of homeschooling. And he went to hear Greg Harris. And Greg Harris was speaking on, you know, the Christian home and the Christian home school. And my husband came home and he said, honey, we're homeschooling them all the way to high schooling. And he said, I just feel this is what God wants us to do. And so from that moment on, we had a sense that this is a family call. We're in this together. We're in this for the long haul. And like any ministry, any calling from the Lord, you have those moments of doubt. You have those moments of insecurity. Did I really hear? And I think when you know, yes, God has called us to do this, God will equip us. If he's called us, he'll equip us. So I think when you have that long-term commitment, especially if that calling is from the Lord and you're doing it for his glory, it really does make those hard times easier because you can say, okay, things aren't going so great right now. God has called me to this, and he is going to equip me. And I know, you know, all of us who've homeschooled for over 10 years have had those moments when we say to our children, well, if you don't shape up, I'm going to put you on the school bus, you know, and of course we don't mean it, and, you know, but that.
No, Meredith, you've never said that, have you?
I have. Or what am I doing? I'm crazy, you know. I mean, I did not enter marriage thinking I would homeschool. I entered marriage thinking when the kids were in school, I would take tennis lessons and get my game of tennis back. And, you know, I have yet to hit a tennis court since my children have been born because homeschooling is really, it is a calling. It is a commitment. And so, but I think when you have that sense of we're in this for the long haul, you also have a sense of, I'm growing stronger and stronger every year. I'm learning more and more about how to be a homeschool mom. So there's less pressure because you know things are getting brighter and brighter, better and better as we grow more in our calling and our commitment.
Oh, I couldn't agree with you more. And I think, you know, I'm laughing at a couple of things as I listen to you because, of course, I've done the threat too with the school bus. I think we both had have children that really enjoy the homeschool lifestyle, and so
yes.
You know, we'll talk about, I think I did talk about that a little bit the first podcast I did. You know, what kind of homeschooler are you? Are you a lifestyle homeschooler, or do you homeschool for specific academic reasons? You know, and I think lifestyle. Just to recap all of the last episode, and I gave a little test. Such a teacher, Meredith, that people could go through and really tune in to the type of homeschool parent they are, because I think that really helps put things in perspective, and you get overwhelmed if you're segmenting everything, you know, whether it is everybody's in a different book, and, you know, like one of the requests I had on the blog post that I posted and asked people what they wanted to hear as far as shows upcoming, you know, with, you know, struggling with multiple age children and things like that. So if you've got everybody in a different textbook, a different workbook, you know, trying to correct worksheets at night, it can be this huge nightmare. And so, you know, we are going to address things like that in the practical. You know, right now we're a little bit in the philosophical just to set the stage. And, you know, so, you know, we have both of us instilled in our children that it is a commitment, it is a lifestyle, so that when we make that threat, they're not packing up their backpacks all excited to be, you know, going to school. They're you know, telling the line. Now, both of our families, you know, we're both homeschooling high schoolers, and so, you know, they understand we no longer have to make those threats, and, you know, they understand what is required, because at this point, they have some major training that's taken place, and, you know, we look at things a little bit differently. So, you know, we know that it is a commitment, but we also have to be practical, and I know that there are seasons as well. And I want to discuss, you know, several seasons that people go through, and one would be with, you know, very little children, and let's just start there, and then the other, you know, we'll get into when they're older. But let's just start with the little ones, Meredith, you know, just that nursing time or diaper changing, you know, teaching them to be potty trained. And, you know, I just love my daughter, but she decided to get a pet last Christmas for the kids because they would love it. And when you have, you know, well, this is the girl that was going to grow up and have all these dogs in her house because her mommy never let her have dogs in the house. So, you know, she has five children under the ages of, you know, seven and a dog. So, you know, it can be a nightmare when you're trying to get some school done and you're trying to get a puppy not to chew on everything and, you know, and that kind of a thing. And you can get weary, you know, so let's just address those years. What are some things, I mean, we probably need to devote a whole show to just that stage, but we're just going to touch some pointers here. So what are some things that you you did when the kids were really little to make life easier?
Well, you hit on a big key word, is weary. I'm 51, and I have more energy now than I had when I was nursing babies. And I just have to say that you have to just kind of come to terms with the fact that you're a little on the tired side, and I think that you have to realize when you're in that season that everything takes twice as long because there's so many interruptions when the kids are little. And even if you have big children, if you have little children in the mix, things are going to take longer. If you're nursing, you're going to feel tired. I cannot tell you how many times I would be reading to my kids when I was pregnant or nursing and fall asleep while I was reading to them. And
sometimes, of course, everybody does that there.
Yeah. Do you want me to read? Because you're going to fall asleep, you know, and I would just think, oh, I'm such a bad mom. But, of course, you're not a bad mom. You're showing your children, you know, I could take the easy way out, but I am really putting forth every ounce of energy I have into loving my babies and to loving you and schooling you. And so I think relax and enjoy that season of life. One thing that I would say is a real safeguard, and I did this when my kids were babies, is keep home the majority of the time. The majority of the time, be home. Keep your schedule simple, your life simple. And, you know, we homeschool, but we can get really busy going here and there. And I never did co-ops when my kids were little. I waited till they were a little bit older before we started into those kind of things. And so I think just keeping the home fires burning and getting into a schedule that is flexible. I like to call it block scheduling. You know, this is what we do before lunch, and this is what we do after lunch, and, you know, and this is our bedtime. And that way there's a sense of order and rhythm. And I think little ones thrive with order and rhythm, and moms thrive with order and rhythm because they can say, okay, I have 30 more minutes, and then the kids are all going to be down for their nap, and I can rest a little. Or maybe, you know, finally read my Bible and have my quiet time or something like that. So I would say just keep life very simple, very streamlined, so that you are not trying to do more than you can. That this is a precious season. It's over very quickly, but when you're in it, it doesn't feel like it's going to be over very quickly.
Right. I agree that, you know, I was exhausted in my 30s. And it wasn't for lack of eating well or, you know, back then I felt like I exercised a lot more because you're running after little kids. I was a lot thinner than I am now. And, you know, I just feel now that I have so much more energy because, for one thing, my sleep's not interrupted. You know, that's a big
right.
part of it. And, right. you know, for another, I feel that when the kids are little that we spend our time keeping them alive, you know, from, you know, doing something that is detrimental. And, I think I'm one of those overprotective mommies anyway because yesterday I was sitting outside in a, you know, one of those little lawn chairs while the little kids were all here. My grandkids were here. And so my 18-year-old son, my 13-year-old son, yeah, both of the boys were outside with the five little ones. And Sammy, who is six, came up to me and goes, "Grandma, why are you so worried that we're going to get hurt?" Well, let's see. We had two on scooters going back and forth like wild people. We had William, who found a big rope with a lasso at the end and was trying to lasso one of the kids going by on a scooter.
No.
We had another one climbing up to the treehouse, which I, you know, scream at Nick because the side panels had big gapes in them. It used to be like all the panels were perfectly ticketed so that it was safe, and I'm afraid somebody's going to fall through. And so, you know, no worries. But I think that,
oh, no,
you know,
I'm the same way.
You know, yeah, I just, you know, was being a mother hen. So finally I took the rope and tied it between two trees very low, and I told them to jump over it and do bunny hops, and two hops was, you know, and that kept them all entertained. At least that rope was off, and they put the scooters aside because they were happy to jump over the little low, very, very low rope, and it was in the grass. And, you know, it was, by the time everyone left at 8, I'm exhausted, and, you know, because I'm not used to doing that all the time. But then I, you know, remembered that during those days, that front yard, because we have a very long asphalt driveway, so that front yard was our haven and where the kids played, you know, a lot of their times. And that's where I would do things like, you know, read the mail or, you know, magazines came or whatever it was, and just keep an eye on them there. So, you know, I concur. I didn't do a lot of outside things. You know, we did maybe a field trip a month or something like that. So I think
right.
that's great.
Right.
But let's talk about, you know, multiple ages and some ways that, you know, we're a big unit study family. So for us, I did start with workbooks and textbooks, and the only thing I stayed with a textbook with was math. That was the only thing that we had. Everything else, I ended up chucking, truthfully, Meredith, because other than using textbooks for some information, and I'm finding my daughter is doing the same thing, because we find, especially let's just pull out science, for example, certain science curriculums have the same thing maybe in a third grade book that they have in fourth grade. You know, if you're studying
right.
insects in third grade, it starts out with studying insects again, but a little bit deeper. And most homeschool families will go deeper because the kids are going to be interested and you're going to go off on these little, I call them bunny trails. So for us, unit studies worked so much better. We took a topic and we really delved into it. We would do a schedule like a Monday, Wednesday, Friday. That was for science, and a Tuesday, Thursday, because history was not my friend back then, although my older kids like history better than science. So it's kind of flip-flop. But, you know, and then we did our history stuff. And then whenever we could, on a Friday, we would do a lot of fun things and do reviews, as well as I came up with all of these little learning games that the kids would do to test, you know, skills. I didn't give them a, you know, a test, but we would always go over some of the things we learned. So that worked really well for me, and I still do that today. You know, we have more text and, you know, curriculum per se, but we do work together. I make the younger ones usually have to work up to where the older ones are. We meet somewhere in the middle for some things, and then I can assign the younger one more age-appropriate activities, whereas an older one may have to complete a paper, a report, or, you know, a slide presentation. What comes to mind is we were studying the Civil War period, and so Michael did a huge, he took a science fair board and flipped it over, and then, you know, he reenacted a scene, whereas
oh, cool.
Anne did a PowerPoint presentation. So we're both studying the same period of time, but one is, you know, I didn't even know we could find all the little guys. I just love the internet now. We didn't have that when we first started homeschooling, did we, Meredith?
Right. No, we
you
did
know.
Not.
Yeah, so we, you know, other than the trees were not authentic, we ended up using those little plastic Christmas tree trees, but because he needed a forest. But other than that, you know, it still kept us together as a family. So that worked for us. So I know you have had more multiple age children homeschooling at one time than I have. So what have you done to keep it, you know, a little bit more together?
Well, we have used unit studies too a lot. And we also, I try to at least have one time each month where I'm reading out loud to all of the children at the same time. You know, and I would say some things that are helpful are to do as much as you can together. Work with the older kids alone while the younger ones are napping. Let the older ones do independent work while you're working with the younger ones. And I know this sounds silly, but if people are doing independent work, try as much as possible to do it all in the same room, because then you can help people without, like, moving to different parts of the house. And it keeps things calm. You're able to kind of keep a pulse on what everyone's doing, and it keeps things calm. So now sometimes when the kids are really, like, when you have a high schooler and then you have toddlers, the high schooler is going to need to go maybe in a room and close the door to have some quiet. But I try as much as possible. Even now, I just have the two in high school that we're all in the same room. Working. And so if they're going to be on the computer, then I go up to the, you know, homeschool room, and I'll sit in a chair and work and just be there. So if they need me, but, you know, otherwise we're all down in the family room working. And I think that also when you have a big family, help them to become very independent. So, you know, you're not spending time you could spend teaching them preparing lunch. I would have one child prepare lunch. I taught my children when they were very young to fix themselves breakfast, so that there's a lot, you know, that all the free time that I did have, I could use teaching them.
Oh, that's very good. Well, Meredith, hold on a bit while we take a break, and we'll be back in just a few minutes.
Great. Thanks.
What am I missing?
There has to be more to life than school chores and guys.
What should I do with my life?
Finish Well Radio, 7 p.m. Eastern Time on the first and third Mondays of each month on the Ultimate Radio Network.
I'm a publisher, and one day my daughter Christina asked me to write a novel with her. Well, that day was long ago, and that little girl is now an adult. But our novels live on. The Truth Seekers Mystery Series highlights a homeschool family, the Murphy Teen, in an action-adventure novel that is sure to entertain as well as teach creation truths. To get your copy, visit our website at truthseekersmysteryseries.com.
Welcome back. My name is Felice Gerwitz, and I am your host along with Meredith Curtis, and we are the Vintage Homeschool Moms Lunch with Meredith and Felice. We are talking today about joyful homeschooling and some of the things that might be helpful to you in your homeschool day. And while we could probably spend an entire episode just on any one of these things. I wanted to cover some of the questions that I received from a blog post I have on a website where I asked you, the listeners, what type of shows you would like to hear. And your questions really ranged just to everything, so much of what we are providing, Meredith. So it was really, really a blessing to post that and to hear from so many listeners about what they would like to hear. And, you know, when I think about, you know, joyful homeschooling and some of the things that could obviously rob our joy, two things come to mind. And this is one of the things that people ask for help with, and that is people that have chronic illness, maybe their children are chronically ill or they are, and also the special needs, you know, mommies that have kids with special needs that they're homeschooling. So, you know, we could look at those things on the surface and say, well, you know, that would definitely rob me of joy. So what are some things that you'd like to recommend in those areas, Meredith?
Well, but, you know, I've been really blessed. My children have been pretty healthy, and we have not had physical challenges. But I do have a very close friend, and her younger daughter has cerebral palsy. And so I have watched, and her mom is one of the most joyful people that I've ever met, and so is the little daughter, Hannah. And one of the things that I notice is that she is able to assess her daughter at each year, really several times during the year, and what are the weaknesses, what are the strengths, and compensate for the weaknesses. One of the things that with cerebral palsy is that Hannah is not able to do as much writing, and her hands get tired much more quickly than other children's hands do. So so her mom is her scribe, and often Hannah will dictate to her mom, and her mom will do the writing. So she's not trying to fit Hannah into a mold, but she's allowing Hannah to progress at the rate that Hannah will progress. But on the other hand, she doesn't treat Hannah any differently than she treats her other daughter. And she expects Hannah to be diligent in her schoolwork and to learn and to grow and to move forward. So I think that is just a foundational kind of thing. Another friend of mine has dyslexia herself, and her daughter has dyslexia. And so one of the things that she found was this little clear plastic placement card that you can put over the line that you're reading, and it just kind of lets everything else be out of the picture except for the sentence that you're actually reading. And for some reason, different colors were easier and other colors were harder to use, and she found the perfect color and this little card, and that was a, you know, a real breakthrough for them. So I think that what I'm seeing in moms that are joyful in this situation is that instead of looking at these chronic conditions or as bad things, they're looking at them as challenges, and they're being creative and they're seeking ways to make homeschooling effective, and to just say, okay, well, this is a roadblock here, but we're going to find a detour, and we're going to arrive at the same goal, which is to educate our children in a way that honors Christ.
All right. Well, very good. And I've had children that have struggled academically. I've had gifted children, and I've had, you know, one child especially is, you know, Neil, the oldest, who has a form of Down syndrome. And so I will say that Neil is the happiest of all my children. you know, he just, even when he got in trouble, you know, within, you know, a nanosecond, he was on to the next thing. You know, it was more of my struggles and frustration that maybe he wasn't getting things as quickly, that I had to learn and overcome more so than anything with him. So, you know, that's one area that I had to grow you know, grow in the Lord and also trust in the Lord, because all I could think about with Neil that just, you know, was a roadblock for me was the future. Like, I couldn't do today when I first learned about Neil. I was so set on, you know, what was the future going to hold for him. So once I could get rid of that, I could just, you know, decide on today. And
so,
Felice,
would you say, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but would you say there was a lot of fear in your heart in those beginning days? And so before you continue, how did you overcome that fear?
Well, truthfully, not well. It was 1 year almost to the day of mourning. I don't even know at this point exactly what I was mourning. More of my, you know, I was an overachiever on steroids, if that makes any sense. Probably none of you would ever believe that, right? With what you know of me. You know, and so not so much with the, you know, the list and this by this date, but more of, you know, everything I did, I had to give it my all, and I had to, you know, only, it wasn't even to please others. It was more of a, you know, personal thing. And because I had a very loving and supporting family, so it wasn't, you know, that, you know, things were required, but not, I don't think it was a psychological imbalance. I don't know, I could be wrong. But you know, but it was the mourning. And so once I realized that, okay, so he had the medical attention he needed, he had some physical therapy and speech therapy, and I had hired out everything I could possibly hire and even met with a lady that her daughter was deaf and she was sending her away to a special school. I just knew I couldn't do that. She had even found a school for Neil. And at that point, when I thought of sending my child away, even if it was a school that would be so much better than anything I could do at home, that, I think, shook me out of my, you know, whatever it was. And I said to my husband, I'm going to really look into this. And so I had enrolled him into a preschool and was there a lot with them and, you know, found he did fine. He was a little bit delayed in some areas. And had even looked at a kindergarten. And so when Neil was going to do that, it turned out that I was going to be there, you know, again, volunteering and helping out. And we built a house on the other side of town. And, you know, I remember staying up. I couldn't even go to sleep with the thoughts of Christina would have to stay later in preschool because I wouldn't have time to go get her, you know, time and schedule. And it was, you know, at that point that God allowed me to meet a lady who was homeschooling. And I'd heard of homeschooling. I'd talked people out of homeschooling, you know, saying, well, you're not qualified. I'm a teacher, you know, and I know that you can't be qualified to do that. So, you know, I was not the perfect candidate. But then when I looked at it and I looked at what we would be able to do with Neil, I was just sold on it. And, I mean, Neil just blossomed at home. He really did. And, you know, other than, you know, little delays here and there, he's very, very, you know, much able to do anything, you know, at this point. I mean, he's self-sufficient and he can do anything he needs to do. So, you know, that was a hard time for me. And the other is at the same time, I was getting chronic migraines. And, you know, of course, is there any stress in your life? Oh, of course not, you know. And, you know, they want to put you on antidepressants and things like that. And I am just never have been a big medicine person. So I didn't want to take anything. And, you know, so it was a lot of struggle because, you know, with migraines, you can be in bed for days. And thankfully, I was only in bed for one day and not, you know, months. I know a lot of people really struggle and have to be on medication. So, you know, so it was a difficult time for me. And, you know, I have to say, Meredith, that it was also a time of extreme growth because, like you said, there weren't a lot of people homeschooling. Our big homeschool group, I think, was made up of 7 families, you know, when I finally did connect
mm-hmm.
with them. And, you know, we would get together in somebody's living room and just share once a month. And so I missed my connection to my friends from, you know, that I'd had when the kids were in preschool and I was playing tennis.
Right.
I didn't even know you played tennis. But, yeah, I was doing that, you know, and I was missing that connection and going out to lunch and all of the things that, you know, I thought were important at the time. And so, you know, for me it was a growth in, you know, humility, compassion toward what my kids needed, what my husband needed. He was also, had started a construction business, and I was helping him with that. I did all the bookkeeping and, you know, helped him with all of his licensing and that sort of thing. And so, you know, there was a lot on our plate, on my plate, but I know that if I opened up the lines now and we took all the callers or questions, every single person here has, you know, a something that's happening in their life that is, you know, maybe to anybody else insurmountable. But I really feel like the crosses that we receive in life many times are ones that we can bear, but the only way that we can bear them is by going to the Lord. So it was a time of great spiritual growth for me. And so, you know, I look back at that time as almost like, you know, I don't know if you've heard the term, I'm sure you have, but if the listeners, you know, the honeymoon period with the Lord. I mean, I could open up the Bible and there was the perfect verse I needed. Or I could ask for just the littlest prayer, like with the baby, you know, in the back seat, saying, oh, Lord, I'm so tired. I need to run into the grocery store. Can I please find a closed parking spot?
<You
know? laughs> I don't know if you've ever prayed for a parking spot. You know, and there it was. Just little, you know, answers, the little butterfly kisses from heaven. And so it was a great time of growth for me. You know, finally the migraines passed, and I still get them, but, you know, not consistently enough where I take anything for them other than drink a Coke. So if you see me drinking a Coke, you know that I'm getting a headache.
Oh.
But, you know, and my son's grown up now. My baby's 32. And, you know, all of that worry, Meredith, all of that worry and anguish that first year, you know, really was not warranted. And so for those of you that are listening, maybe have a child that maybe you just found out about him or her and just got a diagnosis, or you're worried about, you know, the future, I would just say, you know, take one day at a time, because I feel like the enemy robbed me of that year. You know, I mean, not disappointing years, you know, but you know, it's pretty solid, I thought, in my walk with the Lord. But I really feel like in that area, that must have been just an area of extreme weakness, because we're mother hens, aren't we? And we fight for our kids.
Oh, yeah.
You know? And so to me, this was, you know, do anything you want with me, but, you know, hands off my kids. And, you know, a firstborn son, you know, it was, I had to die to what my dreams were going to be for Neil. But I mean, that child, I prayed that he would talk because his speech was so delayed. He does not know the meaning of the word stranger. You know,
no,
he just, you know, I mean, you've met Neil, you know.
I've met Neil, and he's really awesome. And I was thinking, I'm so glad that you invested in him because, you know, he goes off, he works for your husband.
Right.
You know, he just is living you know, the life God called him to live. And I think when you were talking, I think so often we don't understand that God has a unique, specific call for every one of us. And we kind of, instead of thinking about that, we think about the normal life. But, you know, there are men and women that God has called to not be married, to not have children, but to devote their lives completely to ministry. And, you know, how does that fit in with normal? So I think maybe we can learn when our children have challenges or chronic conditions or disabilities that, you know, what seems to us not normal, to God, He has a perfect call on every child's life. And it's not a plan B for God. It's a plan A.
Right.
And
right.
I think that gives us a lot of joy, you know.
It does. There was a story that I heard. I didn't know this family personally, but the little girl was very, I don't know if she had had an accident or if it was a birth defect or what the issue was, but she was pretty much bedridden. And because of the joy that this child gave others, people would flock to the house just to see her and just to be in her presence. And she just loved Jesus. And she just talked about the Lord. And because of this child, they were saying so many hearts were converted to God. Like hardened sinners heard about this. And they, you know, they would say, oh, you know, I can go and be around this child and that won't happen. And they just, you know, by her very presence and the fact that this family opened their home to strangers because of this, you know, and this is somewhere, you know, in Europe that this situation happened. But, you know, we don't know what purpose the Lord has for us, but, you know, joyfully embracing it. And that is, you know, something that it's a mind and a heart issue, Meredith. You know, we talk about our children's hearts. Let's talk about mom's heart for a minute. And, you know, how important it is to take care of moms. And then we've got some questions here that I want to get to before the end of our hour. So let's talk about taking care of mommy. I know, you know, I'm open to what any of you have to say because that is an area I really struggle with. I feel that when, for example, you know, on the rare occasion that I get my nails done or get a pedicure, I feel like I'm being selfish, and I do get my hair done. But other than that, you know, I have a really hard time making time for me. And I want to share, Meredith, you know, a conversation that you and I had privately, and one of our friends died, and both of us were shocked hear that. It was Debbie Strayer, who we both loved, that was an icon in the homeschool community, and Debbie wrote a curriculum years ago. In fact, I have it, and Christina is now using it, Learning Language Arts Through Literature, and loves it. And, you know, I'm sad because I never even got to tell Debbie that my daughter is now using it. But, you know, it was a shock to us because, you know, she's a little bit older than I am, I think. But, you know, one of my peers in the homeschool world who goes around traveling and speaking, and it just came out of the blue. And so, Meredith, you and I were talking, and you told me, you know, that we both needed to get with it. And one of the things I don't do is take that time for me and, you know, exercise. I mean, nothing. I started since we talked. Be glad to know. I've been on several mile walks, and with Michael and Annie being on travel baseball teams, by the time you get all your stuff out of your car and hoof it to whatever field, I know I clocked in about 10 miles one weekend. I was exhausted. my legs still haven't forgiven me. I feel like a pack rat, you know, carrying this stuff. I'm looking at all these other mommies that have it together with their little wagons, and I'm, you know, carrying the cooler and the heavy chair and my, you know, my other bag. And so I'm calling that weight-bearing exercise. Does that count?
but
talk to me, Meredith. You know, get me out of this mindset of I'm being selfish if I take any time for myself.
Well, I think that, you know, there's joy in putting the Lord first, Jesus, others, yourself, and there is joy in, you know, putting others before you, and I do try to live that way and do that. But I also realize that if you don't take care of yourself at all, then do you have nothing to give to people? And one of the things that I grew up in a very angry home with a lot of yelling and things like that. And so one of the things that I have struggled with, you know, in my life is to have a bad temper. But one of the things I find is if I exercise every day, I really don't lose my temper between exercise and the Holy Spirit. And that really helps. Not that there's ever a time I yell or anything like that. There is, but so I've made a commitment in my adult life to set aside time every day to exercise. And sometimes that's meant doing an aerobic video at home. Sometimes it's meant running. For years and years, I ran 2 miles every day. Sometimes it means going to work out at the Y, which is what I do now because my kids are at an age I can leave them and go exercise. But that has been something that has helped me a lot as far as just feeling refreshed and feeling like I have energy. Another thing that occasionally, and this isn't like once a month or anything, but maybe a couple times a year, I'll take one of my daughters and we'll go and we'll get a pedicure. Sometimes they'll take me and we'll go and get a pedicure. And I also have a friend who, you know, she rubs my feet sometimes. Aisha, who lives with us, will sometimes rub my feet. And that is such a blessing because there are times that there is so much going on in my life that I am so busy, so focused on. And then for someone to just, you know, massage my neck or massage my feet, I can literally feel the tension draining out. And what happens when the tension drains out is that you are nicer, you're more pleasant, you care more about other people because you feel better now. And so I think that there's nothing wrong with, you know, if you enjoy reading a good book, to read a chapter of a good book every day, or if you enjoy baking, to, you know, bake occasionally. And I think that's, you know, so I would recommend this because I think it makes you a nicer you when you can let, and I think a lot of what those times do is let that tension go away.
Right. Which is important. And I know, you know, in other times when I've talked to you about things, you'll say, I'll call you right back. I'm going to go for a walk around the block. And you do
That's right. Yeah.
You know?
And I pray. Yeah.
Met you, I'm thinking, seriously, Meredith, you have to go walk around the block and pray before we talk.
A habit I built into my life that if I'm very upset about something, I go talk to the Lord about it. So if I'm very upset, it will be a very long walk. And if I'm a little bit upset, it will be a short walk. But then by the time I'm home, you know, I've talked to the Lord about it. I feel at peace. And, you know, so, but if I stay in the house, there's always someone who needs me or something that needs to be done. And that's why I'll go and I'll walk around the block. When I had babies, I couldn't do that, of course, because you can't just leave your babies and say, I'm going to go pray.
So. wouldn't go over really well. Oh, gosh. But, yeah, all things that, you know, we need to work on. Okay, we have a question here. Having 5 children from 2 to 15, I found that they are all so different in their interests, learning style, and ability. How do you go about meeting all of their needs, but also streamlining your educational choices to make it work well for mom, too?
That's a great question. And, you know, I think the first thing is that I don't think, and don't get me wrong when I say this, but I don't think we have to cater to our children's interests and to their learning style. I kind of look at knowing my children's learning style as a way to help them when things are difficult. And so I think in my teaching, when they're younger, I try to do a lot more hands-on activities. But I've always tried to teach my children with visual, listening, and kinesthetic activities because I feel like you know, maybe they're a visual learner, but they can learn auditorily sometimes too by hearing. They can learn with hands-on things too. So I think sometimes we can pigeonhole our kids and then feel like, you know, we're running ourselves ragged trying to teach them in this one particular style, when children need to be able to learn in all the different styles. And as far as interests, this is something that I read somewhere, and when I quote it, I cannot remember who said it, but I know that, you know, it wasn't me. So I heard it from somewhere. I just don't know who. But it was, there are no boring subjects. There are only bored people. And so what I have seen, too, is that a lot of times with my children, when we learn a little bit about something, it pipes their interest because, you know, they think, oh, well, that I didn't know that. That's interesting. And I love to hear my children say, oh, I didn't know that, because then I know I've caught their attention. And mm-hmm. so I would say, as a family, your daughter likes horses, you can try to bring horses in as often as you can. And the whole family can have affection for horses because the one daughter does. But then you're also remembering that your son likes trains, and so your daughter who likes horses learns to like trains more because that's a family interest. So, you know, I'll say things to our kids like, as a family, you know, we're interested in horses because Betty likes horses, and we're also interested in trains because Johnny likes trains. And it gives us a sense of not only following our own interests, but being a servant to one another and really rallying around their interests. As a result of that, my children are very quick to, if they're somewhere and they're shopping and they see something that someone else in the family would be interested in, want to read, want to pick up, they zoom in on it, because I've kind of trained them in the way we've lived to not just care about their own interests, but also the interests of other family members. So,
very good.
So I would say you do not have to divide up your schooling and say, well, he's an auditory learner and he likes horses, so I'm going to read him stories about horses. No, you read a story to horses to everyone in the whole family and show them the pictures. And then maybe afterward, you know, you make a recipe in the kitchen and call it horse feed, and it's maybe really a cookie or something. So right. You're kind of doing all of those things and everybody's having fun. But then the next day it's trains and you're focusing on the other interests. So,
right. I think that's really good. I know one year, Christina just loved oceans. In fact, when she was older, she got her scuba certification. She and Neil both did, but she went on and got two more certifications after that. So that love of the oceans and the beach never left her. And Neil, on the other hand, was fascinated with the stars and astronomy and spaceships and space travel and liked movies that had to do with, you know, the space. So he, you know, really was interested in that. And I thought, you know, how can we be more, one's under the water, one's above the skies, you know, how are we going to come somewhere, you know, in the middle? So we did that, Meredith. We studied all about oceans and, you know, fishing and all of that stuff. And then we also studied all about astronomy, and that was like our two big units for the year. And then we went to SeaWorld with Christina, and I think Jeff, that was the year he dropped her in the tank with the stingrays. with they are. I know. That was one of our funny stories, and I just said, no problem. I'm going to go buy her a shirt. You know, they're so expensive at these places, but you know, got her little shirt. But, you know, she was leaning over because she was bound and determined to pet one. And so, you know, and then we went to the Space Center with Neil and Christina, and we had wanted to camp in Titusville, but I don't remember what happened with that. We never did do that. But and I think we took my family because my dad loved the Space Center.
Aww.
And, you know, when we were growing up, we were at every launch possible. And, you know, if you ever have been at a space launch, you can go to every one that you think you're going to go to. And I think we only saw one
take off from our own backyard, and that was one of the night launches because the whole sky was lit up. So, because they always, you know, they're counting down, and they're, you know, you're all excited, and then something happens, and they have to delay it. So, but we were there for many of the non-launches, and we saw Apollo 13, Apollo 11 that landed on the moon. We saw it from a way distance. So, you know, I grew up with loving that because my dad loved it. So, you know, you're right. You can share it as a family. And, you know, to this day, you know, Neil will see something that reminds him of, you know, those times and want to get Christina something. You know, I'll have to remind him, well, Neil, you know, it's kind of a knickknack, something she'll have to dust, and she doesn't like it like she did when, you know, she was at home. So, you know, but it does. It makes the family more cohesive. And I do want to, you know, also reiterate what Meredith said about, you know, catering to our children's needs. I mean, we want to do some of that, but I really feel like that's another thing that, you know, is maybe a lie that is out there that, you know, our kids are going to be missing out, because I say over and over again, my kids are getting so much more benefit of my time and my attention. Even as I host these podcasts, you know, when I'm done and hang up the phone, they're going to have lunch ready for me, and we're going to hang out and go over, you know, what they learned in history today. So we have that time to connect. Whereas if they were in school, they're definitely not going to be catering to my kids' needs in any way, shape, or form, giving them any time to even think. I mean, my children have a lot of time to think and to plan and to pursue things that they're interested in. I facilitate that. You know, for the ones that like to read, we have, you know, those trips to the library, we go to the bookstore. For the ones that like art, I mean, we have so many things that they have done through the years that were crafty and that they like to do. And now that they're older, they've weeded through some things that, you know, are no longer interest. Like, I never thought I'd see the day that my son would leave that Lego table. And turning 13, it happened because there is dust all over that table now, where there never was any dust. It's a black table. And, you know, because, and he turned 13 in July, you know, but he just has been so busy that he hasn't had time to just chill and build. And his older brother thought he should have given it up years ago, but it was something that he liked doing. And, you know, he finally has, you know, said, we need to package up some of these for the little kids, meaning, you know, the grandkids, which I'm sure will enjoy them. But, you know, and it's in their time. You know, I wasn't going to pursue, oh my gosh, you're past the age of, you know, appropriateness for Legos. You know, it's in their time and when they're ready. So I think we need to, as homeschool parents, you know, have some of those, you know, it's okay in those areas.
I agree. I think, you know, I've had children who play dolls. Well, I notice in general, homeschooling children will play dolls. They'll play with cars and trains and things like that longer than kids maybe in the world in public schools. But the truth is, in public schools and in the world, they are so pushing kids to grow up so quickly and not enjoy just being a kid and hitting the baseball and playing tag and, you know, just things that kids like to do. So, you know, I see that more as a good thing than a negative thing in any way, that, you know, our children still like to do wholesome things instead of, you know, things that wouldn't be so wholesome.
Yeah, and I know we're going to go over time here, but I do have one more question I want to get to. But another thing I want to say, too, is, also, with my kids, there's been a season of indecision, I call it, because they've been so into whatever their little things are that they were into. Like, you know, one of my kids loved to weave. So we had, like, the wood weaving thing or, you know, doing, you know, a specific type of craft or drawing in a book or, you know, taking photographs. That, you know, of bugs in the yard, and every day they had to go run out with their camera and take a picture of something, you know, to a season of that's not an interest anymore, and I can't let that upset me, because the minute they do something, I don't know if you do it, Meredith, you think, oh, photography, yeah, maybe that would be a good thing. Or, you know, we start pigeonholing them into, you know, like even with Michael, he was so into Legos. I said, well, do you want to do some of the engineering stuff? Or, you know, there's robotic Legos, and Legoland is not that far away from here. And he was not interested in that. You know, that was not where he wanted to go. So we need to chill a little bit. Some school mommy,
yes.
You know, maybe you guys are a little bit calmer than I am, or you have, you know, a few more children, because, you know, I'm back to one that's almost graduated and two are in high school. So, you know, I don't have five underfoot. You know, I have, you know, pretty self-sufficient kids that make me breakfast and lunch, you know. Oh, gosh. But, you know, so do realize that there is a time where they're trying to figure things out, and that's okay. So I'm saying that for myself as well, Meredith. I just need to hear it out loud. Okay. Aww. I've got one of those that's kind of in the indecisive stage. All right. How do you joyfully teach when kids have decided no matter what you try to do with curriculum, fun, et cetera, that they don't want to do it? And if you could, whoever posted that question, let us know how old your children are, because I think that really helps us to, you know, I think there's different lines for me anyway, Meredith, that are drawn, you know, if they're under a specific age. You know, for me, I always said to my kids, this is not a democracy, it's a monarchy, and I'm the queen. So,
right.
You know.
Well, immediately my first response is this, no matter what the age. I think that is a character issue, and I immediately would realize I have a character issue with my child that I need to deal with, because I don't, you know, I'm not a mom. I'm not going to wash the dishes or make dinner because I enjoy it. It's fun. I'm going to do that because that is, you know, my duty. It's my job. And my children, I've always told them as they grow up that, you know, schooling is your job, and we're going to learn this because I feel like it's important for you to learn, and this is what the Lord has led for me to prepare for this year. And, yeah, if you want to do stuff, we'll definitely pull it into what we're doing. But my goal is not, I tell my children this often, my goal is not for you to have fun. My goal is for you to learn and for you to become the man or woman God wants you to be. So I think the first thing is I would not in any way try to live up to your child's expectation of what is fun and what is not fun and what they want to learn and what they don't want to learn, because you are in charge, you are the boss, and you're going to need to do some attitude adjusting, which I would recommend maybe some parenting with Proverbs, Felice, maybe.
Right.
Do you touch on that at all in your, because I love that. I love parenting with Proverbs.
The homeschooling with Proverbs. I do have that set, and so it takes the book of Proverbs, and we delve into it. I'm actually in the process of redoing that entire set because it turned into 18 lessons, and I really wanted to be able to do it in a year. So we're redoing it as well as a family and doing it in 2-week segments. But what we did was we took the book of Proverbs and we just really took each segment of it and just prayed through it. So really listening to what the Lord said to us. And there's so much wisdom, you know, it's one of the wisdom books, but, you know, in the book of Proverbs. And so that was something that we did as a family, and that definitely tremendously helped our attitude. You know, and she said it's one teen and the rest under 7. So that is difficult to have the spread of ages of children. But I know, too, that we really hone in on the fact that we're a family and we work together and we play together, you know. We do things, you know, that are not apart. So even, you know, if one child is playing sports as much as we possibly can, we all go and support that child. If there are other obligations, like there was this weekend, Nicholas and Annie were going over to Christina's house, and they have a little above the ground pool, and they were helping them take that down and mowing lawn and helping them, at, you know, their teenagers going to their sister's house and helping her at her home and not getting paid, you know, for this. We're family. You know what I mean? And so we do things as a family to help each other out. And I just love that they do that, you know, and it's a tremendous blessing to all of us. So family is very important. And I also agree with Meredith that you really, you know, need to just stop. I mean, we've done this before, Meredith, and I don't know if you've ever had to go to such drastic measures, but I've stopped all of schooling until we could find out, you know, exactly what the issue is and get to the root of that issue.
Absolutely, and, because you know, character is key to successful homeschooling. Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
You know, if it took time to get that worked out, then we did. And we you know, set some parameters. You know, like there, a friend of mine with a family of 8 children, and I remember she would say, for every chore, this lady was amazing, I could never do this, but she did it well, she would write out on a little note card exactly how the chore is done. Even if they couldn't read, she had it on a note card, and she said, okay, you know, this is your job, little Johnny, you're going to empty the wastebasket in the trash can in the bathroom, and so this is what you do, you go get the trash bag out, you know, you tie it by the handles, you pull it out, you put another trash bag in, and you put it back, you know, where it goes. And this child got all of it except for that little putting the trash can back, and he continuously left it in the wrong place. So when she served him dinner one time, you know, she was putting food on the plate, she went around to his chair and she put it underneath his chair. She was telling me the story. And he said, Mama, what are you doing? And she goes, well, you know how you never remember to put the trash can back? I'm going to put your food under your chair just to show you, you know, like gave him a tangible example of what, you know, and she said it took doing that twice and he got it, you know, or you know, like I couldn't do that.
I love it. That's
isn't
awesome.
That funny? Well, another friend of mine, a big Catholic family, and, you know, at Mass, you're supposed to be quiet during church. And she said to the kids who were so fidgety and could not sit still, she said, you know, one of the good things about the Catholic Church is there are lots of services on Sunday. So she warned them ahead of time. She said, if you cannot sit through one whole service, we'll sit through another one. And that only took 2 times, too.
Oh, my
and
goodness.
The rest of the children were always perfect. And I remember saying to her one time, you know, your little kids are so good. And she told us that story. So all the other families had to do was tell that story to their children about what the Joneses did in their family. And their kids were good, you know. So, I mean, there's a lot of things, you know, that, I mean, if we knew a particular situation, maybe we could help out more. But, you know, a lot of things that can be done. And, you know, Maris, like you said, it's a job. It's their job for now, and they don't, you know, always, let's do this before we end. I'm going to just give you 3 things, and then I want to recap what exactly we mean by joyful. And of course, we've gone over our hour, but, you know, the things I've written down, Meredith, are 1, a commitment to continue to homeschool. 2, to keep things simple, especially if you have younger children. 3, if you're working with multiple age children, again, you know, keep things simple, either doing unit studies together and you know, not so many outside of the home things unless you are doing a co-op and you think that is going to be a blessing instead of having to have so much work that you're doing. 4, taking care of mommy, you know, whatever that means, whether you're trying to exercise a little bit, eat right, or, you know, just having a little bit of downtime. And 5th is to understand that, you know, if you have chronic illness or a special needs child, to, you know, give yourself time to adjust. And, you know, if you can get a support network, that's great. And we hope that we're that support network for you. But, you know, as we end here, Meredith, I'm going to give you the floor. And
just share a little bit, you know, about what does joyful homeschooling mean? Does it mean that we're jumping up and down and happy every single second and, you know, singing Kumbaya with our children under the stars every night? You know, what exactly does that mean?
Well, the Bible, I can't remember word for word the proverb, but there is a proverb that says, if there's joy on your heart, it will show on your face. And so if you take a quick look in the mirror and you don't see joy on your face, then you can ask the Lord to fill you up with His joy, because it is a fruit of the Spirit. I think joy is often cultivated by focusing on the positive rather than the negative and being grateful. And so I think if we start off each day thanking the Lord for everything He's done, for who He is, and constantly saying to our children, I'm so thankful for you, I love the way you do that, I appreciate this, I think as you're thankful, as you're thanking God, as you're, you know, noticing the good things in your children and the great things about your homeschool day and how the Lord turned challenges around, you'll begin to feel joy bubble up and you'll be able to see it in your face. And you can have the perfect homeschool day and you can have this perfect schedule and the perfect students and still be a little bit grumpy, because if you focus on what you don't have rather than what you do have, you'll always be dissatisfied. But if you focus on how good God is, how wonderful your children is, how wonderful your husband is, all the blessings, all the good things, you'll find that you'll walk in a lot more joy. And so I think it's a choice to be positive, and it's a choice to be grateful. And joy just flows from that, and to laugh at things instead of getting angry, and to deal with discipline issues right away before they become big things, and to just remind everyone, you know, we're serving God, and He loves us, and He's been so good to us, and, you know, He has an agenda for us today, and we're going to walk in it. As we walk in His ways, we're going to be filled with joy and with blessing. So, again, the focus is always the Lord, and every moment serving Him makes a difference for eternity. So what a privilege and what a joy it is to be home with our children and to have this season in our lives when we can homeschool them.
Oh, very good, very good. And, you know, I also want to encourage you to go to MeredithCurtis.com. And if you click on the books link, you'll see that Meredith has quite a few topics with the word joyful in it, in books, Joyful
yes.
and Successful Homeschooling, Volumes 1 and 2, Joyful and Successful Workbook, Your Homeschool Journey, Joyful and Successful Teaching. So definitely go take a look at those books. And, you know, it's something that I know, Meredith, that you've worked really hard to achieve, and, you know, can only have done it with the Lord's help. So, again, I want to thank you so much for coming on today and being with me on Mondays. If I remembered exactly what we were talking about in October, I know we're going to do a holiday, getting ready for the holidays and homeschooling at some point, but I don't remember if that was October or November. So come back and stay tuned next first Monday of the month with Meredith, and we'll have that information on our e-zine. So if you sign up, you'll get the schedule that way. And then you're going to be jumping over and co-hosting on the Finish Well radio show. And you are doing that with quite a few people. So if they follow that RSS feed, if you go to the Finish Well radio show page on the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network, and you find that little button and click on it, you'll be able to find out exactly when the shows are, and then access those in the archives after they're recorded. But you are also doing a live show there.
Yes.
Very okay,
good. Thank great. You so much for having me. And I won't be on the air with you next week, but I will be in the chat room listening and excited about Vintage Homeschool Moms. Thank you for letting me be part of it. And have a great day.
All right. Thanks, Meredith. Bye-bye, everyone.
Thanks for tuning in to the Vintage Homeschool Mom Show. visit Felice at MediaAngels.com and TheVintageHomeschoolMoms.com. Vintage Homeschool Moms is a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network.